Take your Bibles, if you will, please, and go with me to the New Testament book of Romans, chapter 15. Romans, chapter 15. Have any of you ever done the DNA test that you can mail order, Ancestry.com or 23andMe? Anybody just kind of, no, Jack says, no, I don't want to know my people. Yeah. Yeah. So, okay, so my last name is O'Malley, right? And you grow up your whole life and you know your grandfather came from Ireland. I mean, the family story's told. He came over with a little bag of gold and he landed at Ellis Island, you know, the whole thing. And you're just hoping that when you get the report back, that at least you're something Irish along the way. Well, I did the test. I don't know why there's such an allurement to it. It's like, find out your people, know your tribe, you know? And so we did the thing, and yeah, well over 50% Irish. So, you know, I felt like, okay, that's winning. Grandma was German. Grandpa was Irish on my father's side. And so, you know, so it worked out. It was like, okay, that's good. And I don't understand how they do it. I mean, I'm not trying to be inappropriate, but you know, put saliva into a jar. Like, that's weird. I don't know any other way to get it, I guess, but, you know, maybe he could send hair, but then I couldn't. But then they test you, and they say, not only are you Irish, John, your people came from this place, and yet there are other traces of you, this and this, and you say, wow, all that from some saliva. And then my brother took the test, and it connected us. They said, you're brothers. Wait, we knew this. A church has a DNA too. How do you know your tribe? You find your kind. How do you know what your people are made of? What's the DNA of a church? And where you are today on this Sunday, this is a demonstration of who we are. This is the DNA of First State Baptist Church. You say, what do you mean? Well, if you're a guest here today and Pastor pointed out the flags, I mean, we know what country we're in. We do. We got that. We're in the U.S. of A. But we're burdened for other people. Stephen is here. And Julie, which flag besides the flag of America means the most to you of this array? The one with the star or the one with the bird or whatever? Is that a bird? It's the one with the bird?
No, the star.
The one with the star. Don't make me confused. The one with the star. Now, which flag is the one with the bird? Papua New Guinea. Do we have people going there today? I mean, here, sorry. We got people there. They're already there. They couldn't make it. It's a long drive. Why would we hang these flags? It's in our DNA. It's who we are. And because we care about the need of the gospel getting to everyone in the world, it's a demonstration of who we are. Romans 15, Paul is writing to the church at Rome. This is interesting. Paul had not been to Rome yet. He wants to get there. You say, well, how does a church get started 1,000 miles away from the center of Christian activity? Well, as persecution came, the gospel began to spread. And as it spread, churches were formed. This is an indicator of what churches do. Churches produce churches. And so what is our DNA? Is to help get churches started around the world. How do you get churches started? Find people who will go and tell. And then you start that church. And then you get them to do the same thing. This is who this church is. If you're a guest here today, you're in a church that cares about every community in every place around the world that they can have the gospel available to them. I wish I could tell you that the gospel is as readily available in other places around the world as it is here in our own country. I am grateful that the gospel is readily available, not in every community, but readily available. But yet there are many places in the world that's not true. Paul writes to the church at Rome, and I'm in chapter number 15. And if you haven't found Romans by now, just kind of open to anywhere and fake it, and no one will know. I was singing with pastor's daughter up here, and we had the wrong book. I just opened the page and just sat with her, and as she didn't sing either, because neither of us knew the words because they weren't in that book. So just fake it, you're there. Romans 15, verse 23. Paul says, But now having no more place in these parts. What is he saying? Well, you have to kind of back up a few verses to see that. Paul says in verse number 19, through mighty signs and wonders by the power of the Spirit of God, so that from Jerusalem and round about unto Illyricum, I have fully preached the gospel of Christ. Yea, so have I strived to preach the gospel, not where Christ was named, lest I should build upon another man's foundation. But as it is written, to whom he was not spoken, they shall see. And they that have not heard shall understand. For which cause also I have been much hindered from coming to you. Now we understand 23 better. But having no more place in these parts, and having a great desire these many years to come unto you, whensoever I take my journey into Spain, I will come to you. Paul is referencing where he's preached the gospel. And he's saying, I started in Jerusalem, roundabout into Illyricum. I put the gospel in as many places as I can, and I want to come to where you are, and I want to have fruit or ministry among you. This is very interesting. As I mentioned earlier, no apostle went to Rome to start this church, and it was Paul's desire when he was done in that one side, that one place, to get to them. But then think about the advancement of the gospel. It was in a Jewish context, if you will, for a number of years. And so then as they began to push out, the gospel began to spread. And by Acts chapter 16, Paul has the Macedonian vision. That is to say, he sees someone in a dream that says, come over into Macedonia and help us. And for the first time, as we now understand modern day Europe, that the gospel then breaks into Europe. Well, then as the gospel begins to make it its advances across Europe as we now know it, he references he wants to get to Spain. Where is Spain? It's the westernmost part of Europe. And though he's saying, I want to get to Rome, he said, I'm really headed to Spain because I put the gospel here in as many places as I can. I want to have fruit in Rome, but I want to get to the end of the continent and get the job done. That's our DNA. The gospel came here. We start looking for places where we can put it as well. So we have Brother Knickerbocker and his wife here from Burkina Faso. We have Brother Pratt and his family here going to India in a difficult area. And you look at those places, and I don't want to say one is not difficult than the other. There are political difficulties, governmental difficulties that are there. India is still going through their election. It's a six-week thing. It ends. Is it end in the end of May? Has Punjab voted yet? Punjab is not completely voted. Not completely voted. 6 weeks. It takes us 6 weeks to count. It takes them. Never mind. Takes them 6 weeks to vote and get the tabulation in. And the election that's happening in India right now, I don't, and I'm not a political type guy from the pulpit, but that's a critical election. The guy who is Modi. Wow. Christianity can suffer even more in a heightened Hindu state where Christians are being already persecuted, not just in the north either. I mean, the north has been that way. But now in the South too, we have people in the South and we're seeing the same persecutions come. These are difficult times, but we want to get the gospel. If what will be the world's largest nation in the next 5 years is India, the world's largest, right now it's China, but India will surpass them. We want to get the gospel there. We want to pack it into as many places as we can and keep the gospel moving. It shouldn't just come to one station and stop there. It is our job to get the gospel past us. Well, as we continue to look here in Romans chapter 15 and verse 23, I know you're normally getting out every Sunday morning at 11:45, and I'll do my best. If you're a guest here today, you don't get out at 11:45. The Bible says, in verse number 24, whensoever I take my journey into Spain, I will come to you. For I trust to see you in my journey and to be brought on my way thitherward by you, if first I be somewhat filled with your company. Paul said, I'm headed to Spain. I want to come to Rome and I want to see you. When I get to Rome, I'm going to need your help to get to Spain. Why? Churches care about mobilizing missionaries who will advance the gospel of Christ. That is what this church is about. Is that we want to say, we learn of a place that doesn't have the gospel. We want to get somebody there to deliver the gospel. Then we look at, as I came in, first thing I spoke with Pastor about this morning is your map. And I said, you know, and I'm looking and I'm watching, and there are red lines and blue lines. And I said, what's a red line street and a blue line street? He said, there is no difference. And then I wanted to go and say, okay, then everything has to be blue or everything has to be red, but we can't have confusion. It's okay. Red pencil. But the fact is this, is that we want to look at those streets and say, where isn't the gospel? And we get that there. Why? That is our DNA. Paul is now going to speak. In Sunday school, I spoke about this. And I'm going to pick up that same thought. Paul is going to refer to the offering that he is collecting to take back to Jerusalem. Brother Jack, do you remember why they were taking up an offering for the people in Jerusalem? Do you remember what was going to happen? A dearth, a famine, a drought, a time of doing without. And so the churches were giving for that. But when they gave, there was something, the way they gave really stands out to us. Because the way they gave was everybody in the church made an individual decision to say, I'll do this for that offering. For us, we look at that and say, well, if they did that for a famine, why can't we do that for a different project? You know, because we're going to tithe here. We're going to pay the rent. We're going to pay the bills that we have. We're going to take care of those things with the tithe that we receive. But when it comes to the gospel, if we dip into the tithes to do everything, we're going to have a real restriction on how much we can do. But if each of us make specific decisions that I'll give this above my tithe, then we have an opportunity to make a difference with the gospel in more places. If we took all the funds from the general fund and just gave those to missions, there would be a limit of what we could do. But in this case, we make individual decisions about what to give. Paul is writing to them about that offering. Verse 25. But now I go into the saints. Now I go into Jerusalem to minister unto the saints. Watch these words. For it hath pleased them of Macedonia, that's a region, and Achaia, that's a nearby region, in the area of Corinth and such. He said it pleased them to make a certain contribution for the poor saints which are at Jerusalem. Why are they poor, Jack? The dearth. Right. And so he says, the churches of Macedonia and Achaia have made a contribution. Verse 27. It pleased them verily, and their debtors they are. For if the Gentiles, and this is adding a racial dynamic here and a religious dynamic, because the believers at Jerusalem were from a Jewish tradition, the believers of Macedonia and Achaia were of a Gentile heritage, And so you put all of those together, that you add in the racial dynamic or the religious dynamic into that. They're saying it pleased them of Macedonia to contribute. And their debtors they are. Because why? Jerusalem said, we send you spiritual help. And now Macedonia says, and because of what you did and you taught us the love of Christ, we're going to send you material help. It's a powerful lesson to learn that in Christ we are one. Our background, our tradition, our heritage is completely secondary to anything else. Primary is Christ. Notice further if you would. It pleased them verily. If the Gentiles have been made partakers of their spiritual things, their duty is to minister unto them in carnal things. The church at Jerusalem was going to go through a famine. The churches of Macedonia, the churches of Achaia said, no, we are going to help you. You'll not go through this alone. Though hundreds of miles separate. Now, think about this. Paul is writing to Rome, and it's 1,000 miles away. And they're aware. I'm coming. I'm taking part. The church at Rome is aware of this offering. Notice further. It says, for their duty is also to minister unto them in the carnal things. When therefore I have performed this and sealed to them this fruit, I will come by you into Spain. And I'm sure that when I come unto you, I shall come in the fullness of the blessing of the gospel of Christ. We talked about this morning that there were three kinds of models or three models of offerings that we take at our or receive at our church. First, it is the offering that is the tithe. God sets that amount. The second offering to which we made reference was the heart-based offering. That is where I just choose to say, I want to be involved in that. Then there's this third kind of offering. This is the faith-based offering. This is the offering where I make a decision by faith to say over the next year, not giving to a famine, but rather giving to the cause of our missionaries, that I will give. This morning, I want to take the next couple of minutes, and I only said it that way to instill hope. I have 18 points. There's some words I just want to point out to you briefly. Go back with me, if you would, please. In 26. In verse 26 it says, it hath pleased them. 27. It hath pleased them verily. If there's anything about the promised offering, it's this. Number one, it is an offering of delight. It's a pleasure to give, to realize I can give something here at this church that touches India. I can give something here at this church that touches Burkina Faso. I can give something here at this church and it touches Papua New Guinea. Where else are we? And Ireland and Cambodia. I can give to those places just by the offering plate. So the offering plate becomes the deposit for what we will do with the gospel of Jesus Christ. You say, well, that's pretty neat. It ought to be a pleasure to you. If giving is not a pleasure to you, it is either indicating you're not giving at all, or it's the fact that maybe your heart's just not right about giving. Because you can give. Even Paul wrote to the church at Corinth and said, I don't want you giving grudgingly or of necessity. I want you to have the right disposition in giving. What is the right disposition? Well, it's a pleasure. Jesus told Paul, and we don't have it recorded save in the book of Acts, and that's why I'm saying it this way. Paul quoted Christ when Christ said, it is more blessed to give than it is to receive. You say, well, I've never found a blessing in giving. Then you probably haven't given, because it is a joy to give. You say, well, I think it's a waste of money. Well, I found a lot of times the people who complain the loudest are the ones who are not really doing it anyway. And so I want to point to the attitude or the disposition that you have about this offering. It ought to be a pleasure. That when we get this card once a year, and as we have this card, we take it, we fill it out, we turn it in, and we say, this is what I'm promising to give. This offering is to be an offering of delight. Where it says, I don't have to give. I get to give. Do you know how this church is in this place? It's because people at another church and other churches gave this same way to put this gospel's preaching station here. And so we don't want that to end with us. We're saying, where can we give? But I want to talk to you about your heart in that first. If your heart is not in giving, then what's going to happen? It's going to be a drudgery to you. There's going to be no pleasure in it. Here's the second thing I want you to see today. Not just the pleasure or the delight that they had in giving, but I want you to see in this next verse, it says in 27, it hath pleased them verily, watch these next words now, and their debtors they are. So one, it's an offering of delight. Number two, it's an offering of debt. You say, I don't want debt. Well, in the sense that we got the gospel to us, we have a church that's planted here, money was raised, and now we say, let's do that and repeat that in Burkina Faso. Let's repeat that in Papua New Guinea. Let's repeat that in Ireland. Let's repeat that in Cambodia. And then let's repeat that somewhere else in this area to say, where do we go next to plant a church? There ought to be a sense of delight, but number two, a sense of debt to say, yeah, somebody was good to us. Let's be good to somebody else, right? It's to pay that debt. Number three, you see how quickly this is going to go on those 18 points? It's also a sense of duty. Number one, it's a sense of delight, the promised offering is. Number two, it's the sense of, number two, it's a sense of debt. Number three, it's a sense of duty. When I read this verse, if the Gentiles have been made partakers of their spiritual things, their duty is also to minister unto them in carnal things. I want to be pleased or delighted in the offering that I give to say, this is a blessing. I mean, there are a lot of bills that we pay, but this is one I love paying this because lives are changed. But then there ought to be the sense of duty to say, you know what, but I am a child of God. And while I'm saved by grace and all of those things, the truth is that I have a sense of duty about this. I must be giving. You say, well, I don't feel that way about it. Then I would say, look back to your heart and say, how did I get the gospel? I was saved as a four-year-old in Schroon Lake, New York. I was at a camp that my parents brought our family to that camp, Word of Life Camp in Schroon Lake. The family went to the camp and we kids were, you know, shuttled off to go do stuff. And there was a teacher that had the wordless book. Jack, you know why they call it the wordless book? It doesn't have words. It just has colors. And she showed me that book and I trusted Christ as my Savior. Somebody gave for that camp to be there. Somebody gave for that teacher to be there. In every single thing, I have to realize somebody gave me the gospel. I have a sense of duty to say, I want to give someone else the gospel. Someone gave, so this church should be here. We ought to give so other churches could be planted in other places. And the last thing I want you to see is this. And again, I only say last just to instill hope. Paul says in 28, when I have performed this, what is he talking about? Taking the offering from the churches that gave to the church at Jerusalem to certify that offering and sealed it to them this fruit, I will come by you into Spain. And I look at this and I realize that this offering is not just a delight, and it's not just a sense of duty, and it's not just the sense of we owe a debt, but it is a deposit. Notice how he says it. It is fruit. You're taking from your basket of fruit and sharing fruit with others. And Paul is saying, I'm going to take this offering and go do something there. Why do we have missionaries here this morning? They're not here to shame you or make you feel guilty or bad. They're saying, we're taking your funds. Right now, you all are supported by this church, right? We're taking your funds, and this is how we're using it. I mean, that's a powerful lesson to learn. And so what I want you to realize is when we come together this week, tonight, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday night, we're talking about what are we doing with the gospel that we have. So let me ask you something. What are you doing? When it comes to this offering, is it a delight to you? Is it out of sense of, you know what, I really should do this. It's the right thing to do. But there are times in our lives where things can become so overwhelming that we lose sight of why we do what we do. You know, sometimes a mom raising her kids, it's like she just wants all her kids to have some sort of clothes on at least by noon. Something. Right? Mom getting kids ready for church. Want them to have at least somebody wear somebody else's shoes so when we get there, we can make them all in order, make sure their socks are right, or did they even remember socks? Just try to make them look somewhat. What is our duty in all of the stresses that we have? To enjoy giving, to remember to give, remember delight, sense of duty. It's a deposit. It's to say, I am certifying that this is what I'm giving and it is seen as fruit to my account. I want to be a part of the advancement of the gospel. Do you? This is how, this offering is how we have that sense of awareness. Would you stand with me?